Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elby.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, you know, I feel a smile in both of our voices this week because there's just so much to talk about.
Such as?
Well,
Jack Davis.
Well, you know,
the reason why the Republicans lost New York 26 because of Jack Davis.
I think that's going to be a little hard to sell because it's so much more fun to talk about how it was Medicare. Yeah. Like Steve Israel said, let me give it to you in alphabetical order.
Yes.
Well, all right. There is something to be said for...
Well, wait. Was the results in New York 26...
Oh, you want to throw in the results?
No, I was going to say, are the results from New York 26 good for Israel?
Yes, I think they're very good for
Steve Israel. The chairman of the
Steve Israel was the chairman of the Democratic Committee and still is. And I was very happy about the results in New York 26, where a district once represented by Jack Kemp and Bill Paxon and other Republican luminaries, Tom Reynolds.
Republican control since 1970.
All of these very major Republican names represented this district, which was some suburbs and some rural areas between Rochester and Buffalo. And a district the Republicans clearly counted on. One of the only four out of 29 in the state of New York that voted for John McCain in 2008 over Barack Obama, and yet...
Wait, just to interrupt him for a second. Chris Lee, won it, the former congressman who gave up his seat the sex scandal on the Craigslist shirt. But it was said he got 72%. Carl Palladino defeated Andrew Cuomo in this district.
The gubernatorial candidate. Yes,
right.
Carl Palladino.
He wanted to be the state's next governor, and he would have, for Carl Palladino to carry a district, you just know how Republican this district is.
Absolutely, except that this week, in a bit of a shocker, I say bit of a shocker only because the polls had been indicating the race was moving in this direction, a woman named Kathy Hochul, who was a good candidate, but not, somebody who had suddenly descended from the heavens.
She was a very good candidate.
She ran a very good race. She got on the right issue, and she hammered it home, and she was absolutely fine. Defeated a strong Republican legislator who was somebody who seemed to be a perfectly acceptable candidate in a Republican district.
Jane Corwin, conservative.
And also this third-party candidate you mentioned, Jack Davis. Now, Jack Davis had run for the seat before.
Three times as a Democrat.
As a Democrat. So a little confusing maybe for some people in the district when he shows up as the, quote, Tea Party, unquote, candidate.
Right.
All right, so he's not a real Tea Party guy, and maybe he isn't a real Democrat. Who knows what he is? He's a millionaire.
He's Jack Davis.
He's a millionaire.
Exactly.
Okay. And he's running again. He gets 9% of the vote. Now, is that 9% enough to explain why Hochul got 48-49% of the vote why Corwin got less than 45%?
He got 9% on Tuesday, but a month ago he was getting 20% in the polls.
Exactly, and that's what hurt Corwin.
And not only that, by appearing to be a serious threat to Corwin and the Republicans holding the seat, the Republican, Jane Corwin, went after Jack Davis tooth and nail.
Instead of going after Hochul.
Exactly, because she thought that was a real threat to her winning. So by going after Jack Davis relentlessly, it brought her negatives up. And so, yes, he did only finish with 8 or 9%, but for a while he was double digits, clearly double digits, and he was a serious factor in the race.
Yes, so in a sense he did to her what Ross Perot did to George H.W.
Right.
Bush in 1992, that in the end it may not have been his actual election day showing so much as the beating up that he gave to Bush during the campaign year, and it really became way back in the beginning of the year. Now, in this case, though, the analysis that we have just given this is not the conventional wisdom. The conventional wisdom from Republicans was, it's just Jack Davis. The conventional wisdom from the Democratic side was, as we said, Medicare.
I think both are true. Medicare is certainly the reason. I mean, that was the overriding
Otherwise,
issue.
There would have been no contest in the first place. Even with Jack Davis in there, I would assume Corwin would have not had much trouble defeating them both.
If there were no Medicare issue? Well, how about this? What if there was the Medicare issue, but there was no Jack Davis from the beginning?
Well, I think that if there were no Jack Davis from the beginning, the polls are showing us, and we'll have to see, how this all shakes out and where it really goes. But the polls are showing us that there was a sufficient amount of concern about the Ryan budget plan and the voucherizing or the partial privatizing of the Medicare system.
No question.
That a lot of people who would normally have voted Republican without a moment's hesitation hesitated, especially because Jane Corwin, who had the choice of being ambivalent about it, she could have temporized about it or said, well, I'll have to take a look at it once I get to Washington. Instead, she wholeheartedly embraced the Ryan plan.
Well, she could have done what Newt Gingrich did a couple of weeks ago, saying it was right-wing social engineering, and he got hell from the Republican Party.
And then he backed off and said, I would have voted for it, and I think, Paul Ryan is great, and I never was trying to say bad things about Paul Ryan.
So which was the correct Newt Gingrich?
Well, he shouldn't have done any of that.
Right, I agree.
Everything Gingrich did was maladroit on this issue, and maybe what Corwin did was the stand-up correct thing to do and the conservative thing to do in this particular instance. She probably, given the chance to do it over again, would have been a little less enthusiastic, I think, about embracing the Ryan plan and worrying about Jack.
Well, what she said in the after the election was that, I never thought people would fall for this. I never thought that the attacks on the Paul Ryan plan, people would stoop to that kind of... Of course, the same scare tactics, the Medev scare tactics that the Democrats ran in New York 26 are very similar to what the Republicans did against Obamacare in 2010.
In 2010.
You know, and the death panels and all that stuff.
Well, that's, so well, they talked about death panels. They also said that $500 billion was being redirected out of Medicare and into paying for the Obamacare system.
Both sides
which,
do this.
Which is true. The question is whether or not that was going to leave Medicare recipients in a worse condition than they would have been without Obamacare and the new system. That's the debatable part. But there's no question what the Republicans said. They said that money was being just taken away from Medicare recipients. And I would also have thought Jane Corwin would remember the spring of 2005 when Social Security proposals came from the Bush administration about how maybe 10% of your Social Security money might be privately invested and people could opt in or opt out, partial privatization of Social Security. And that was an enormous bust. Long before Katrina, the Bush administration was stumbling out of the gate in its second term.
And that is exactly the point I was just going to raise. This happened in early 2005, right after the Bush so-called mandate of 2004. And we now have to wonder what the Republicans think their mandate was in 2010. Was it to redefine the way Medicare, Medicaid is funded, things like that, or the way the program is operated?
Well, I just happen to have Paul Ryan right here. Well, I mean, it is a Marshall McLuhan situation here because he was here at NPR just the hour before we were recording this podcast, and he said this on that subject.
If the biggest threat to our economy today is our fiscal problem, a debt crisis, I think it's a huge abdication of leadership if you're not proposing a plan to get this debt under control.
Obviously, he's not going to pull a Mitt Romney and change his position on something like that. And
can't.
Neither is the Republican Party.
He has no other identity in the national consciousness other than this plan right this moment. And he may have, over a longer period of time, quite a career. Who knows how far Paul Ryan's going to go. But for this moment, he has broken through to the national consciousness on this issue. Get tough on entitlements. Stop giving a guaranteed benefit by which all of your bill, supposedly, or nearly all of your bill, is paid by Medicare.
And while the Republicans embrace that, the Democrats are not so unhappy about that either, and that's why Harry Reid forced this quick vote on the Ryan House budget in the Senate on Wednesday, and of course it went down to defeat.
Interesting. All the Democrats and independents voted against it, and five Republicans voted against it. And it was in a slightly mixed bag of Republicans in that you had the two women from Maine.
You had Snow and Collins. You had Lisa Murkowski.
Who was just reelected and has no reason to be particularly fearful.
No, and as a matter of fact, she was reelected against a Tea Party
candidate,
a Republican candidate. Also Scott Brown, who does have things to worry about.
In 2012, and of course was going to be against it. The odd one out was Rand Paul from Kentucky, who had a budget of his own that he just wanted to vote for, and he didn't want to vote yes on Paul Ryan's plan. He wanted to put up his plan, and that plan got his vote and how many others?
Six. And how many votes did the Obama budget plan get?
Zero.
I mean, this is the games that both sides are playing.
Exactly.
And Harry Reid wants nothing better than to remind voters in 2012 and beyond that this is what the Republican Party stands for. And so, I mean, the Democratic Party is not the first party to have a force the other side to go through an embarrassing vote. And this was their way of pointing out that Ryan plan does not attract overwhelming support.
Well, it's not popular in the polls. I think Paul Ryan has a good point when he says people don't understand that these changes would only affect people under the age of 55. But I think he goes too far if he says no one understands that, because a lot of people do understand that, and they're under 55, and they know it's going to affect them, and they're unhappy with the way it's going to affect them. Also, a lot of people over 55 say, this does not make me feel very secure. What if they decide they're going to ratchet up that 55 a little bit? What if they decide, hey, that this is such a good system for down the road, it's going to save us a lot of money down the road, let's move it up a little bit and have it affect the present-day grannies, the people who are on Medicare today or are about to be on Medicare very soon.
Not only did many Republican voters in New York 26 not embrace the Ryan plan, if indeed this was a referendum on Paul Ryan, but many Republican presidential candidates for 2012 are not on board either.
Now, some are and some are not.
Some are.
Some are. And Paul Lenti is kind of on again, off.
He's
again,
off. No, he has his own plan.
He's going to come up with his own plan. Yes,
yes,
he's got his own plan.
But John Huntsman's for it, and Rick Santorum is for it.
And Michelle Bachmann is for it.
Not yet a candidate, but...
And Sarah Palin.
Not yet a candidate. candidate.
Yes, but these are the people who are willing to line up and say they're for it. And, of course, Newt Gingrich, as we said earlier.
And speaking of the presidential field, this week, Tim Pawlenty is an official candidate.
Surprise!
That was a terrible shock to me because Tim Pawlenty has been, well,
very reticent.
Terribly reticent. Yeah. And it's been months and months and months and months that he's been out there in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina being reticent on national television and in debates for presidential candidates being reticent.
Do you know something? He is my new prediction for Republican nominee for president, Tim Pawlenty.
You think Tim Pawlenty will get the big nod?
That's what I think now.
I think he will cause the big nod. I cannot imagine Tim Pawlenty in that role. And, you know, I mean, we all make mistakes. I could be utterly wrong. This guy could sweep the nation and be the next president, serve for 8 years, and we'll try to change the Constitution to give him a third. But he does not look, smell, taste, or sound like a president to me.
Did Barack Obama in 2006?
Not in 2006, but he did in 2004. And that was what powered him.
Did Bill Clinton seem like president in 1991?
Not so much in 1991, but everyone knew and had known for years that this was a guy who was going to have to be reckoned with on the national level at some point or another.
And
that is
fair.
True. You know that about Bill Clinton.
Yes, and that's
now, with
fair.
Barack Obama,
am I interrupting? And I'm not for 1 minute comparing the political strains of Tim Pawlenty with Bill Clinton's and Barack Obama, who obviously have far superior political instincts, shall we say. But Pawlenty seems to be doing everything right, and he has fewer negatives, I think, than the other candidates in the
that
race.
Is, he is not the other candidates right. in the race. I would say at this point, if you want to talk about somebody who you'd have to put your money on to be at all cautious, it would have to be Mitt Romney. Either Mitt Romney or somebody who seems to have a reasonable, if you will, angle on him to tackle him in the open field, and that would be John Huntsman, who I agree is an almost entirely unknown figure at this point. We don't know how well he'll stand up to any of the scrutiny of real candidacy as yet. But it's just very hard for me to see Tim Pawlenty, yeah. who has not been a clearly identified man of the conservative right, who does not have a strong base either in terms of fundraising or in terms of where he comes from in the party.
That's true.
And is not nearly as charismatic as some of these other candidates like Sarah Palin or Michelle Bachmann, assuming that they get in.
Do you have a prediction?
I think at this point it is a very weak Mitt Romney who is nonetheless the front runner.
Is he like Bob Dole in 96?
I think he's a lot like Bob Dole in 96. It's kind of one of those throw up your hands, well, who else have you got kind of situations, which is why people ask Paul Ryan if he's going to run for president when he has no intention, I don't think, of even putting a toe into it at this point. But people will ask because he has a moment of momentum and he has charisma and he's a smart guy who talks well.
Were you surprised at all by the decision this week that Mitch Daniels said, I'm not going to do it?
I must say I was surprised.
I was not.
I was surprised only because I thought when Haley Barbour got out and left that lane so open for a current governor, a governor with national respect, to run for president, without him in there, there really isn't another current governor who is in position to do it. And it just seemed to me Mitch Daniels more or less had to. Clearly, I would say it's a family situation.
That's what it looks like, too. And, you know, I mean, given the way that the political media loves to glob on a story, and we could talk about Newt Gingrich's Tiffany's bill for all we want, to me, that's a nonsense story. But does it show him as a hypocrite because, you know, he's for fiscal conservatism, but he has a $500,000 Tiffany? That's nonsense. I mean, I don't think that's comparable at all. But the kind of stuff that Mitch Daniels would have gone through, I mean, who wants to do that? Who wants to go through that kind
of
stuff?
You mean because of his personal story with his wife and the divorce and the remarriage
right.
and leaving the kids?
Right.
I do believe that was a factor for him. I also think he just knows what he would be subjecting his family to.
Right.
He didn't want to do that. And I respect that. I'm just saying that for the Republicans, there had to be a tremendous amount of pressure on Mitch Daniels to fill that lane. Now, as you suggest, it's pretty much Tim Pawlenty as the last really established kind of, I've won a lot of statewide races, I'm somebody, you know, to be respected, candidate against Romney. But what's Romney doing wrong at this point?
Well,
he's doing nothing wrong. He is advancing, raising money, looking respectable, giving, you know, acceptable answers. And at some juncture or another, I wouldn't be surprised to see him wind up with the nomination.
Yeah, well, again, I still think Romney Care is going to be just tough to explain to Republican audiences. And I don't think that his PowerPoint presentation a week or so ago was convincing. By the way, speaking of the Republican field, there's some correction in the podcast from Sean Walbeck of Bellingham, Washington. We were talking about the last Mormon that we were talking about last week in the last podcast, Mitt Romney and John Huntsman. And the last Mormon we talked about, Mo Udall. He says, we forgot Orrin Hatch. We did forget Orrin Hatch.
You know, it's not that hard to forget Orrin Hatch, because in his presidential campaign in 1999, I believe I witnessed the high point of that campaign at the Ames, Iowa straw poll in the summer of 1999. He was running, of course, in the 2000 presidential
never got that far.
Election, but it never got to 2000. Yeah. And so he is right, however. Orrin Hatch very much considered himself to be someone we should be thinking seriously about for president in 1999.
It was. And I think he was elected that year.
But our thanks to the listener. And here's the next question. In the current Gallup poll, now left alone on top, my man Mitt Romney, at 17 points, leads only by two, the phantom candidate from Alaska / Arizona, Sarah Palin.
Well, the story is that she and her husband have mysteriously, because they're not admitting to anything, bought this home near Scottsdale, Arizona. And to actually, in many ways, that makes sense.
Much warmer.
Well, Bristol Palin lives in Arizona. Huh. And if you're going to be any kind of a national figure, to fly in and out of Alaska never made sense.
It never made sense. But on the other hand, if you really want to run a presidential campaign, do you really want to run it out of Phoenix, Arizona either?
Well, why not?
Because it's in the wrong part of the country. You're out there far, far away from the key swing states that you're going to want to be in, either in the primaries or later on. It's just not a sensible place to be setting up shop, unless what you're really trying to do is be a national television personality and highly paid speaker who makes a lot of money and gets to live wherever you want to live.
Well, that's what I think is ultimately the case. But I mean, now the New York Times front page, the Arizona Republic front page, saying this is a sign that either she's running for president or she's running for John Kyle's Senate seat, which is ridiculous. I know. Jeff Flake.
I've been to Scottsdale, Arizona. It's a lovely place. Golf, tennis. I mean, there's really no reason to ask somebody why they would leave Wasilla, Alaska for Scottsdale, Arizona.
Is it because
they have a lot of money?
Is it because she has a
sense of humor?
Okay, well, we've now gone through most of the 2012 field, but let's go back to the 2004-2008 field. John Edwards, a name I promised I would never say again, but his sordid tale seems to be coming more sordid.
Yes, it does. Greg Craig, his attorney, well, I should say one of his attorneys, he's his Washington attorney, he also has attorneys down in North Carolina,
right,
has said, my client has done nothing wrong, he's not going to agree to a plea bargain. If you think he is a criminal, indict him. Which is probably just the latest step in the long dance of negotiating some kind of a plea bargain, but it looked like a kind of Sherman-esque statement.
Well, it also looks like John Ensign. I mean, basically the allegation is, or at least what the Justice Department has been investigating for 2 years, is that John Edwards took campaign funds, about $1 million of which, and gave to Riel Hunter, his lover, and to either hide the affair, hide the child, or just cover up the whole thing.
Just bury it all under money.
And if you do it with campaign funds, that seems to be somewhat illegal.
It would look illegal to the untrained eye.
Now, does John Edwards want to go through the public a trial about this, or does he want to settle? I would think he'd rather forfeit his law license and just get it out of the way rather than let this become an indictment and a settle, and a public trial.
It looks like a game of chicken, because it really doesn't serve the Justice Department's purposes terribly well to go through a long trial on this or on John Ensign. Because really, if they indict the one, they're probably going to feel a lot of pressure to indict the other. Otherwise, it would appear that they are being politically partisan, and certainly we wouldn't want that.
The news on the Senate front this week is that Lieutenant Governor Sanchez of New Mexico has announced his candidacy for the Republican nomination for the Senate, putting him against Heather Wilson, the former congresswoman.
Who has run for the Senate before.
Lost the primary to a conservative in 2008, and now she will be running against a conservative in 2012.
Which would not seem to be a desperately different situation from she was in.
And I think a very similar outcome in that, she's on paper a great general election candidate, but in a Republican primary, she's conservative enough.
Yeah.
And Martin Heinrich, the Democratic congressman from, I think, Albuquerque, looks like, at least at this point, the front runner for that seat.
And that is Jeff Bingaman's seat, which he is retiring from in 2012. Another woman who got a lot of attention for running unsuccessfully for a Senate seat in the recent past was Sharon Angle in the nearly neighboring state of Nevada.
Right. And she announced this week that she will not be running in the special House race later this year to replace Dean Heller.
Who's now in the Senate.
Who was appointed to the Senate seat to replace John Ensign.
Why not? I would think Sharon Angle, with her remarkable Tea Party credentials and really nationwide name recognition, would be something of a natural to run for Congress.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm surprised because she was under tremendous pressure from the Republican establishment. Please don't run in the seat, because this is all candidates on one ballot. So obviously, if she splits Republican vote, the Democrat could sneak in to this seat. But I always thought that she said, look, I'm not going to bow down to the Republican establishment. I'm just going to fight. I was surprised to see that she's not going to run.
I was surprised as well. She wouldn't be planning or thinking about running against Dean Heller next year for that Senate seat when he seeks a full term in his own right in 2012.
I don't think she would do that.
The party would not sit still for that. It would seem to me that that would be the end of Sharon Angle. So
I don't think it is. I mean, she still could run for Congress, you know, down the road. Maybe she could just build up her establishment credentials, although I don't see her as an establishment candidate. But my understanding is that she definitely has a run for Congress in the future.
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week, won't you, for It's All Politics from NPR.
I will. I may lose a battle, but I love